When Bob Fitzpatrick was brought in as second in command of the Boston FBI office back in the early 1980s, it didn't take him long to figure out that something was not right.
It was almost immediate upon my arrival.
It would be 20 years before one of Fitzpatrick's agents, John Connolly, would be convicted of corruption stemming from his relationship with alleged mobster and FBI informant James Whitey Bulger. For Fitzpatrick, the troubled relationship between Bulger and the FBI became clear to him in 1981 when he went to do an assessment of Bulger with Connolly's supervisor at the FBI, John Morris. Now, 20 years later, Morris did confess to corruption, but these FBI assessments were common, and they involve agents checking on informants to determine whether to keep them or, quote, close them. When Bob Fitzpatrick spoke with us this week, he recalled how he started to have misgivings on the car ride out to Quincy to meet with Bulger.
What's interesting is along the way, Morris keeps on saying how well I'm going to like this guy, that Bulger's a great guy. And so I get an hour's drive listening to how great he is. And of course, during the interview, I develop the exact opposite opinion.
Why? Why did you think that he was completely opposite of what Mr. Morris was telling you?
What immediately set me off was most informants, when you first meet them, they're great people. You know, they're actually to help you. But when I met Bulger for the first time, he has a baseball cap over his eyes, he has dark sunglasses on, his arms are folded, and he doesn't shake my hand. So I say to myself, okay, what did I do to this guy? So I get inside, and when I'm inside chatting with him, it's very dark. I'm getting an impression that, we're not seeing the light of day here.
Does he take off the sunglasses?
No, he leaves them on. He leaves the sunglasses on, leaves the hat on. But you know what? As I'm talking to him, actually interrogating him, on his right is John Conley, which really upset me. Because, first of all, Conley shouldn't have been there.
He's the other FBI agent.
The other FBI agent, yes. And of course, Morris was his supervisor, and I was Morris's boss. So I immediately made a mental reservation that I'm going to grab Morris after this is over and find out what the heck's going on. But anyway, during the interview, what I found is a guy who's bragging, a guy who's talking about how tough he is. He's talking about his Alcatraz experience, his Leavenworth experience. These are prisons, obviously, that are the most dangerous prisons in the United States. And basically, what he's trying to impress me with is his braggadocio about how tough he is. He's an enforcer. And of course, that's not why I'm there. I'm there really to gauge how trustful he is in furnishing information, and more importantly, how reliable is the information that he's given me? Can I take it to the bank? Can I use it in court? And my determination at the end of the day, at the end of the night, actually, was no.
So, if you suspected that Bulger, was not telling the truth, was bragging, wasn't answering your questions, what'd you try to do about it? Did you try to say, "Hey, look, this guy can't be an informant for us anymore"? And what happened?
Yes. When I got back in the car with Morris, in fact, one of the first questions he asked was, "Well, how'd it go, Bob?" And I looked at him, and I said, "I'm going to close this guy." And Morris was silent. He was stunned. And what he actually said to me was, he said, "No, you're not." And I looked at him. This is my subordinate. And I was going to get into it with him. And I said, "No, I'm not going to do that." And I really just shut up. And we drove back in silence. And so at the conference the next day, I made a formal written recommendation that a Bulger be closed. And I wrote out a lot of the areas, distrust, furnishing false information, maybe actually involved in drugs to this day, and so forth.
And so then what happened?
He wasn't closed.
Right. Well, why? If the bosses say close,
Well,
why doesn't it
it
close?
wasn't funny then, it's probably not funny now, but if I don't laugh, I get angry. Because mistakenly, and again, I think falsely, Bulger was propped up to be the guy who was going to take down the Italian mob. Conley and Morris produced memos saying that his information was spot on. But, you know, during this whole period, even the United States Attorney's Office through O'Sullivan, Jerry O'Sullivan was the strike force chief. He put in a couple of memos saying that Bulger should be continued. So I was fighting against the system, and I lost. I think everything that he did, as a psychopathic person he is, everything he did was to gratify himself.
So do you think that if there was anything going on there in terms of what information he may have provided against Jerry Angiulo, who was the head of the New England Mafia at the time, that that was information that would really just bolster Bulger's power in the Irish mob organizations?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. That's true. That this was a war, in some cases, against the Irish guys and the Italian guys. Bulger representing the Irish guys, and of course Angiulo representing the Italian guys. Mm-hmm. But
and you can say that because your last name's Fitzpatrick.
Well, it's foreign-born Irish, too, FBI. But you could also be foreign-born Italian.
Yes. Let's talk about the murder of Brian Halloran.
Okay.
He was basically a hitman, that's my understanding.
A leg breaker, yeah.
Yeah, and he was an FBI informant. And he,
that's true.
And he gave agents information on a murder allegedly involving Bulger. Can you explain that case and what happened there?
We kept Halloran in a safe house, and we chatted him, we debriefed him, we started developing information. And I must say, you know, I was quite excited because this was confirmation, you know, against the guy I was trying to close. I mean, I was getting real information that, wow, I mean, this guy is a murderer and he should be closed. And so I felt we had enough to present to O'Sullivan at the strike force to go after Bulger. But in the interim, the information was leaked. I don't think it ever came out in court positively who leaked it, although I think Conley was named. And Halloran, and unfortunately, one of his friends, a fellow by the name of Donahue, were machine gunned and murdered. And this would go on, incidentally. I would have four of my informants killed in this way. And as it turned out, all by Bulger. And I fought again to close Bulger. Hmm. But he was not closed.
You have a hard time. You have a hard time saying that even now.
I know.
You have a hard time saying that people in
you know. To this day, I find it very difficult to believe that any of our agents went bad, but I accept that they did go bad, and I'm grappling with that whole thing right now again, as I have been for the last 15 years, in trying to make some sense out of what actually happened. You know, I never expected that from my bureau, from the FBI. But Boston, unfortunately, had a problem. And it was a serious problem. And I don't believe the whole truth has come out even yet.
Bob Fitzpatrick, former second-in-command for the Boston FBI, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Bob Fitzpatrick left the FBI in 1986. He has since testified about his experiences during his time in the Boston office. Fitzpatrick says Bulger could name more people within the FBI, both past and present, who have not been charged, but who he thinks played a key role in keeping Bulger on the run for 16 years.